RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark Delight Podcast with Beans. Because Frank is not here today, which is very disappointing, although he is taking care of something very noble and worthy. He is at a funeral for a veteran who did not have any family, and he's there supporting the veteran and paying respect to his service, which I think is an honorable thing to do, for sure. Which just leaves me to help you get through the mess of news that came out last night, right before the president did his interview with Sean Hannity. And we're going to go over his interview in detail. We're going to go over the stories released by three of the reporters who have had a very, very interesting sort of role in this entire Spygate debacle: Sarah Carter, Catherine Herridge, and John Solomon. All three of them released stories yesterday evening, right before Sean Hannity had the president on. So we will start with the Herridge and Carter stories. This is interesting. There seem to be more text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page that are dripping out very slowly. So we've been getting this sort of dump of text messages. It seems like Catherine Herridge has been getting these as well. She got the McCabe Page text messages, and it seems like we're going to be seeing a lot more of this information coming out as we move on in this timeline. Both Sarah Carter and Catherine Herridge reported on the same story, which is very interesting to me. And they indicate, both these stories talk about how it appears as though it's becoming more and more likely that after Trump was elected, Strzok and Page attempted to touch with the FBI and confidential informants, people inside of the Trump camp, of the Trump administration, to cultivate them as informants and spies on the inside. And this wouldn't be counter to things that we've already heard that have happened. This would be normal, but so disturbing. Think about it. Spies inside of a presidential administration feeding information back to a rogue FBI hell-bent on removing the president from office. The story just gets worse and worse and worse. And we're not even, you know, we're not even talking about the myriad of other scandals surrounding this, like the Ukraine, which we'll get into with John Solomon in just a few minutes. Let's just get into the story. Text messages between former FBI officials Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, this is Catherine Herridge reporting, indicate they discussed using briefings to the Trump team after the 2016 election to identify people they could, quote, develop for potential relationships, track lines of questioning, and assess changes in demeanor. So develop for potential relationships. In other words, let's get close to these people. Honeypot them, basically. Let's honeypot these folks. Track lines of questioning. Let's see what they're talking about with each other, and let's see where we may be able to go with this. And let's take a look at, you know, if their attitude changes, if they get a little suspicious, if they're sniffing something out, changes in their demeanor. This is language that one GOP lawmaker called more evidence of irregular conduct in the original Russia probe. Fox News learned the text, initially released in 2018 by a Senate committee, are under renewed scrutiny, with Grassley and Homeland Security Committee Chair Ron Johnson sending a letter Thursday night to Bill Barr pushing for more information. They're looking for, quote, any improper FBI surveillance activities that were conducted before or after the 2016 election, saying they must be brought to light and properly addressed. The text messages begin on the evening of November 17th, 9 days after the election, and the string discusses an email and briefing to Pence, presumably Vice President-elect Mike Pence, and appears to refer to another upcoming briefing. They showed Strzok and Page debating staffing for the upcoming briefing and whether it would make sense to stay with the same agent or send a different one. It's unclear from the texts whether these were part of the formal transition period briefings between outgoing or incoming administrations or routine intelligence briefings. The text messages that Herridge has are redacted. They're basically going back and forth and saying, should we send this person in? Because it would look a little weird because they're really not supposed to be there. And you notice how Herridge really dances around being unsure of what these briefings to Pence are. And I know that all of us would like to really hope and pray that the vice president had no knowledge of this and that he was just an unwitting participant and they were just going after him because of his position in the administration. Perfectly reasonable. But I wonder if Pence is getting briefings, was Trump getting briefings as well? That has been an issue that we have had for a very long time. Whether or not the president of the United States of America was getting these intelligence briefings and briefings in general from the FBI that would properly alert him to the supposed interference that he had within his campaign, with Russia, etc. When they refer to CI, they refer to counterintelligence guy. I'm thinking that he might be referring to confidential informant. The problem comes in at the bottom of the article, very, 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 very delicately at the bottom. First, she says, regarding the references to new cues, questions, and assessing demeanor, Gil, who was a former FBI intelligence officer, said that the texts that we're seeing here conflict with rules laid out by none other than Mueller when he was FBI director, known as the FBI's Domestic Investigations Operations Guide. He says, based on the formal training all FBI employees required to undergo and be tested on with regard to sensitive investigative matters, these texts indicate both FBI employees were executing investigative strategies on a sensitive investigative matter without any regard for the Mueller holder-endorsed DOJ-DIOG. Regarding the references to the new cues and assessing, quote, demeanor, Gil said, this reference may indicate a, quote, outside-of-the-box question that may not fall within the uniform line of briefing questions. In an effort to see how the recipient of the question may change their tone or catch them off guard. So that insinuates that they were possibly looking to entrap Pence, see how he reacted or see who their target was, whoever their target was reacted. And then we get into the interesting portion. As for using someone's, quote, husband to develop potential relationships, Gil said it was difficult to comment, not knowing who the husband is and whether the spouse was connected to the FBI or DOJ. This husband portion here has to do with Pence as well. Pence's chief of staff was someone named Joshua Pidcock. His wife was Catherine Seaman, who, when we get into the Sarah Carter article in a minute, she doesn't name her last name because she's got a different last name. They say for security reasons, let's just keep her private. Catherine Seaman was married to Joshua Pidcock. Joshua Pidcock was Vice President Pence's chief of staff. Goes back about 12 years with Vice President Pence in Indiana. Was his aide when he was in the House of Representatives. And then when he went to governor, Pidcock went and became the lobbyist in Washington for the state of Indiana. Pidcock's wife, Catherine, was the assistant to Peter Strzok. The reporting says that as soon as she worked very high up on the Clinton email investigation. The reporting that we'll get into from Sarah Carter in a second says that as soon as Pence declared after the Republican nomination, after the RNC, she recused herself from all of that stuff, stepped away, stopped working with Strzok, etc. But that connection is there. And it's even more interesting because Josh Pidcock resigned or was fired in June of 2017, comes on board in January, he gets an ethics waiver, and he leaves in June of 2017. And as I was doing some research today before we get into Sarah Carter, I found some interesting stuff. Now, of course, these are just more of those interesting connections that we don't really know what they mean right now, but I'm going to share it anyway because it's important in my opinion. I did some research into this timeline, and it appears that on June 16th of 2017, word got out that Mike Pence had hired his own attorney to represent him in the Spygate matter. Not uncommon at all. Definitely need your own attorney if you're going to be mired in a special counsel investigation, right? Absolutely. It's not odd that he would hire outside counsel in the midst of the Russia probe, but there are some interesting coincidences here with who he picked. He picked Robert Cullen. Richard Cullen is from McGuire Woods, like I said, was the chairman at one point, is a partner. Comey worked there in the 90s. Cullen is the godfather of one of Comey's daughters. In a Washington Post article about Pence hiring his own attorney back then, it said, quote, Cullen has a pair of small world connections to the Russia case. Comey and Cullen once worked together at McGuire Woods, and Cullen is godfather to one of Comey's daughters. And Cullen was also involved in the FIFA case. That's a case we all know because Christopher Steele was introduced to the FBI through the FIFA case back in 2015. In the New York Times article that points this out to us, they don't mention the name of the soccer organization, FIFA. They leave that out, probably because of the Steele connection. But they say Mr. Cullen has also represented Sepp Blatter, a Swiss national and the longtime president of the international soccer's governing body, who was ousted after the United States announced a sweeping global corruption case in 2015 and criminally charged dozens of soccer officials, but not to date Mr. Blatter. About 10, 12 days after that, Mike Pence boots Josh Pitcock and Nick Ayers takes over. There are reports out there that this had been planned for a couple weeks, this departure. And of course, Pitcock says, I wasn't planning on staying on anyway. It was just a kind of, yeah. And it looks like he went to Oracle as a lobbyist. He's the vice president of government relations for Oracle. So that's where Pitcock is right now. And I think it looks like that Catherine Seaman, his wife, is still in the Department of Justice, from what I can tell. I might be wrong about that, but I haven't been able to find otherwise. There's not much available on her online. I found her Amazon wish list, but there's nothing good on there. So we have a vice president who hires a Washington-connected attorney who represents some interesting people with ties to the Spygate story. Could be just a big coincidence because, honestly, it's a Washington attorney. Very high-profile Washington law firm. Vice President Pence brought them in to be personal counsel. Just happens to have a connection to Comey and that he's a godfather of one of their goddaughters or one of their daughters. And this is like deja vu for me right now for some reason. So there's just coincidences here. And listen, in a world of coincidences, I am not surprised. Let's get into Sarah Carter's story about this because there's more detail inside of Sarah Carter and her story. Okay. Breaking: FBI texts show agents discussed recruiting White House sources to spy for Bureau. Much more bold headline than Catherine Herridge's story. A senior Republican chairman submitted a letter Thursday to Department of Justice Attorney General William Barr revealing new texts from former FBI Special Agent Peter Strzok to his paramour, FBI Attorney Lisa Page, showing the pair had discussed attempts to recruit sources within the White House to allegedly spy on the Trump administration. First of all, a couple of things to unpack here. Where are they getting these text messages from all of a sudden? I would say maybe Horowitz is done with them, or investigations are wrapping, or doesn't seem like these are newly found. Maybe redactions were removed. I don't know. Doesn't seem like from the first paragraph Pence has anything to do with this whatsoever. And I really don't think he does. The lawyer stuff, super interesting. The timeline, super interesting. But I don't think that Pence is being cultivated as a spy. I think his chief of staff could possibly be being cultivated as a spy. Possibly. We'll see. Senate Appropriations Committee Chairman Charles Grassley and Senate Homeland Security Committee Chairman Ron Johnson revealed the information in a 3-page letter. The text had been obtained by sarahcarter.com Tuesday. And information regarding the possible attempt to recruit White House sources had been divulged by several sources to this news site last week. So she's saying she got this story last week. SarahACarter.com. And the letter came out Tuesday, so she reports on it. They reveal that Strzok had one significant contact within the White House, Vice President Pence's chief of staff, Joshua Pitcock, whose wife was working as an analyst for Strzok on the FBI's investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of a private server. A senior White House official told this news site that Pitcock's wife recused herself from the Clinton investigation as soon as Pence and Trump became Republican nominees in July. A senior law enforcement official also told Sarah Carter that Pitcock's wife no longer worked under Strzok after she recused herself from the Clinton investigation. However, the text messages uncovered have left questions lingering about the relationship between Strzok, Pitcock, and his wife among congressional investigators and lawmakers. Sarah Carter has the texts unredacted, where Catherine Herridge had the texts redacted. It seems to me that these two had the story together, both of them had it somehow, and it looks like Sarah Carter is bolder in her reporting of this. For some reason, who knows why. They say, Strzok says, I'm talking with Bill. Do we want Joe to go with Evanina instead of Charlie for a variety of reasons? Strzok here is referring to former FBI Assistant Director of Counterintelligence, Bill Priestap. Joe is Special Agent Joe Pienka, who was the one who interviewed Flynn and has a much broader role in the Spygate story than we know, than we've been led to believe anyway. Brian Cates has a superb thread about Pienka that I will put in the show notes. And Evanina is a reference to William Evanina, who is a National Counterintelligence and Security Center official. Paige says, I'm not sure. Would it be unusual to have him show up again? Maybe another agent from the team? And then Strzok says, or he's the CI guy. Might make sense. He can assess if there are any news questions or different demeanor. If Katie's husband is there, he can see if there are people we can develop for potential relationships. Katie is Katie Seaman. Katie's husband is Joshua Pitcock. That line indicates his cooperation. And that he knows, like, you don't just throw that in there. If Katie's husband's there, he can see if there are people we can develop for relationships. What would he even, like, how does that even come up in conversation over dinner? Hey, we would like you to try and see if there's anyone inside this little circle here in the White House that you can we can use you to identify for us who would be prime for relationship development. Do you think you could help us out with that? If he's not involved and he doesn't know, how do you go up to the dude like that and say that? It's impossible. You can't do it. If Katie isn't on a first name basis with Strzok, I'll come. Katie is his wife. Obviously, he knows. Do you understand what I'm saying, guys? Not like you can answer me. You guys understand what I'm saying. Paige says, should I ask Andy about it or Priestap? Want to reach out for McCabe? Strzok says, I told him I'm sure we could ask you to make the swap if we thought it. There was a major connection in the White House. According to documents, White House sources and the FBI, one of the FBI's top counterintelligence analysts who was personally working for former FBI agent Strzok, had a spouse working directly for Vice President Mike Pence. The FBI asked Sarah Carter to leave her name private. However, her identity is revealed in the texts, but the news site withholds her last name. An FBI intelligence analyst named Catherine is married to Joshua Pitcock. Catherine's name is different from her husband's. Yes, it is. Catherine had been detailed to Strzok and was one of the top analysts into the investigation into Hillary Clinton. The FBI pushes back against the story. During the time that Pitcock was chief of staff, Flynn became the highest profile target of the now debunked investigation into the campaign. And page two of this letter, page two is even better. Here are some of the questions we can look forward to getting the answers to. Describe the nature and extent of your review of FBI surveillance of the Trump campaign, President-elect Trump's transition staff, Vice President Pence's transition staff, President Trump's staff, and Vice President Pence's staff, including your efforts to determine whether that surveillance was adequately predicated. How many counterintelligence briefings were provided to the Trump and Pence transition staffs before Inauguration Day? List the dates, agencies, and each official that represented the agencies at the briefings. Many of the FBI employees involved here are no longer employed by the federal government. How will your review obtain information needed from these individuals, grand jury. And they ask about leaks from the FBI, the DOJ to the media. Now, Wednesday and Thursday, Barr is testifying in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee starting at 10 a.m. It's usually when we get the podcast underway at 10 o'clock, but I have always been known to live tweet these hearings. So I want to rearrange the show so that I can live tweet that hearing for you both Wednesday and Thursday on my Twitter account. And bear with me, guys, today, because I'm not used to doing a show like this for my, you know, on my own, in my lonesome, all by myself. All by myself. Don't want to be. It's very sad. I'm very sad. Oh, God, Celine Dion. I don't even want to think about her. Fun factoid, I used to be a singer back in the day. Moving along. Whew. Okay. So what I want to do is today for a little bit, I want to start looking at Priebus a little more closely. And I want to take a look at whether or not there was any connection there, because Priebus left around the same time as Pitcock did. Really interesting. It's just so swampy. There's just a myriad of swamps. Swampies everywhere. Swampy McSwampersons everywhere. Let's move on to the John Solomon piece. Now, John Solomon has had this train of emails, trail of articles. So as I was saying, Solomon has had a bunch of stories lately about the Obama White House, the Ukraine, Biden, etc., so on and so forth. And I want to get into this latest story, how the Obama White House engaged the Ukraine to give Russia collusion narrative an early boost. So if you guys listen to the Dan Bongino podcast, which I do religiously every single day, you would know he's been talking about this story for a long time. And in his book, Spygate, he also talks about Chalupa from the DNC. She was working this Manafort angle throughout the entire campaign. She stepped away from the DNC to be able to do it. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of the campaign, when Paul Manafort is chosen as campaign manager, out drops this sort of black book information about dollars that were going back and forth between Manafort and Yanukovych trying to do whatever Manafort was doing there. We're not going to get into all the details of the FARA violations and everything else. It's not important for the background here. But what it appears to be at this point is that the Obama administration had a face-to-face meeting with a bunch of people from the Ukraine. The Ukraine wanted to start an investigation into all of this. And the Obama administration, during the time in 2016, January 2016, U.S. officials kept talking about how important it was that all of our anti-corruption efforts be united, said a source who was a political officer in the Ukrainian embassy in Washington who organized that meeting. He no longer works for the Ukrainian embassy, but they had an interest in reviving a closed investigation into payments to U.S. figures from Ukraine's Russia-backed Party of Regions. That investigation was done originally in 2014, led by the FBI, and focused on Paul Manafort, whose firm had long been tied to Trump through Roger Stone. Agents interviewed Manafort in 2014, neglected to charge, shut down the case. And this is what Dowd had talked about in his interview with Byron York, that this case had already been shut down by the FBI and Weissman picked it back up again. Telezenko said he couldn't remember whether Manafort was mentioned during the meeting, but he and other attendees recalled DOJ officials asking investigators from Ukraine's National Anti-Corruption Bureau if they could help locate new evidence about the Party of Regions payments and dealings with Americans. And he says it was definitely the case that led to the charges against Manafort and the leak to the media during the election season, which makes the January 2016 meeting one of the earliest documented efforts to build the now debunked Trump-Russia collusion narrative and one of the first to involve the Obama administration's intervention. No comment. No comment from Rice, the NSC, the DOJ, the FBI. The article is very detailed. It says that this black ledger was kept secret for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, the media and public saw it in 2016, in May. He said he explicitly instructed the investigators who were working with the American authorities not to share the ledger, ordered them to give nothing to the media concerning the case. Instead, they went ahead and did it anyway, and this guy was the one in charge. Shortly after Ukrainian authorities returned from the Washington meeting, there was a clear message about helping the Americans with the Party of Regions case. A lot of talking about it, and then all of a sudden the ledger appears in public. Boop. Greg Craig also received money, as we know, but the Americans weren't interested in that. They only wanted to know about Manafort. And then we get into the money, or the swapping of the prosecutor, almost a bribe by Joe Biden. And the timeline that the DOJ reopened the probe into Manafort is supported by communications between Bruce Ohr, Nelly, and Steele. On May 30th, 2016, Nelly Ohr talked about, directly alerted her husband and prosecutor specializing in international crimes to the discovery of the black ledger. If you remember Nelly Orr's testimony, she talked at length about how she wasn't only working on, you know, the Trump-Russia quote connect. She had other things. Now we get another piece of the puzzle reported in here. Bruce Ohr and Steele worked on their own effort to get dirt on Manafort from none other than Oleg Deripaska. That effort led to the meeting in 2016 where McCabe asked Deripaska if he could help prove that Manafort was helping Trump collude with Russia. We've talked about that. They make Solomon report in The Hill as though he is a opinion contributor. The views expressed by contributors are their own and not the view of The Hill. And then at the bottom of the article, it says all of his credentials. He's an award-winning investigative journalist whose work has exposed U.S. and FBI intelligence failures before September 11. Oh, Lord, all kinds of other things. He's the executive vice president for video at The Hill, and they make him report as an opinion guy. Just ridiculous. And now we're going to dissect, moving on, probably for the last half hour of the show, we're going to dissect the Trump interview with Sean Hannity last night. So last night, on the night that all of this stuff breaks, all these articles come out, Sean Hannity has President Trump on for an interview, the first interview he really gives since the Mueller report comes out. And I have a bunch of really interesting clips lined up for you guys we're going to listen to here together and then analyze afterwards. So the first one is about the Ukraine. Here we go.
About collusion. They're saying they colluded on behalf of Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016. Does America need to see that information, especially in light of all that the attacks against you on collusion?
Well, I think we do. And frankly, we have a great new attorney general who's done an unbelievable job in a very short period of time. And he's very smart and he's very tough. And I would certainly defer to him, but I would imagine he'd want to see this. So people have been saying this whole the concept of Ukraine, they've been talking about it actually for a long time. You know that. And I would certainly defer to the attorney general and we'll see what he says about it. He calls them straight. That's one thing I can tell you.
So interesting here. He often says, from what I hear, I'll defer to the attorney general. Now, you know, he basically kind of like shirks off responsibility for these things and like lays that responsibility on the right people. But he obviously knows about this stuff. So he says, I'll defer to the attorney general. I'll make sure the attorney general has the evidence. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a long time. And that's an interesting tidbit because I think that they've been trying to hand this evidence of the Ukrainian issues to the United States for a very long time and haven't been unable to do so. We'll see what happens there. The next clip is interesting because he says something and I'm not sure exactly what he means, but he's talking about the FBI server. Like, he's talking about Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, and he says they decided to use the FBI server instead of their own so they wouldn't get caught. And I don't quite understand what he means. Maybe he means that if they use their personal devices, it would have been against the rules. Or maybe he means that they didn't think that they would be caught because they were using official FBI and they could redact or conceal. Let's listen to that. And you guys can sound off on what you think.
November of 2016. From Strzok and Page, showing the pair had discussed attempts to recruit sources from within your White House to spy on your administration and reveal that they had one particular contact within the White House, the vice president's chief of staff, whose wife was working as an analyst for Strzok on the FBI investigation into Hillary's private server. Have you heard this report tonight, sir?
I just heard it a little while ago, and frankly, it's very disconcerting if you... If you look at what's been happening, they were the same two, the two lovers that decided to use the FBI server instead of their private, so they didn't get caught. These two were beauties. There's no doubt about it. They were going hog wild to find something about the administration, which obviously wasn't there. We have nothing to do with Russia, except that we've been tougher on Russia than any administration.
Do you see what he says there? He says they decided to use the FBI server instead of their own so they wouldn't get caught. And I'm not exactly sure what that means. So we're going to put that in the back pocket for a little while. And we'll move forward now to the wiretap comment. He makes some interesting comments about when he said that he was being wiretapped. Let's listen.
I don't know if you remember a long time ago, very early on, I used the word wiretap. And I put it in quotes, meaning surveillance, spying. You can sort of say whatever you want. But that was a long time ago. And I've never seen anything like a blow up like you've never seen. Now I understand why, because they thought 2 years ago when I said that, just on a little bit of a hunch and a little bit of wisdom, maybe it blew up because they thought maybe I was wise to them or they were caught. And that's why, because if they weren't doing anything wrong, it would have just gone by. Nobody would have cared about it. It was pretty insignificant, I thought, when I said it. And it's pretty amazing. So you
a little bit of wisdom and a hunch. So he says the wiretap comment, everybody goes mad. Oops, we may be caught. That was a really telling little bit of strategy he dropped out there. Really, really telling. He set them up 2 years ago. Judge their reactions. And here we are today. I thought that was an interesting one. We've got a few more clips here. I hope you guys like this. Because I don't know what else to do when there's no one here to talk to. We've got something on Comey now.
Campaign, your reaction to all that?
Well, I think they made many attempts, and then you see the lying, and you see the leaking, and you see Comey lie to Congress, nothing happens. You see him leaking, nothing happens. And this is leaking classified information. This is leaking really big stuff. I remember the young sailor. In fact, I helped him out with his family because I thought he was so unfairly treated, as you know. But I remember he had confidential information, which is a much, much lower standard than classified. And they put him in jail for a long time. They took away his life. And then you look at what Hillary Clinton did with 33,000 emails and hundreds of thousands of text messages or emails going through the Wiener server or computer, hundreds of thousands of which many were classified. And nothing happens to her. And yet they put a young sailor on for doing something innocent, showing his mother and his friend what the desk looked like. The desk in a 40-year-old submarine. I think Russia and China would have had that picture many years ago. So it's really a double standard like you've never seen. Very, very unfair. But hopefully that will change. I think that will be changing.
You heard that, right? I don't think I need to expand any more on the fact that hopefully I think that will be changing. Now, Sean is going to ask him about Hillary Clinton specifically and what he said right after he was elected. Says time to move on, let bygones be bygones. And I have long speculated and talked about my thoughts about how there may have been some sort of a deal made that, like, I'll let you govern if you let me go, or I'll let you govern if we just kind of brush past this stuff. And maybe that might have been a consideration for, I don't know, a split second. Hannity is going to say now that he had disagreed with that when he said it. And I think a lot of us did, too. We're going to get President Trump's idea about that. We are going to also get into some interesting comments made about the DNC servers that made me jump for joy when I heard them. Let's listen.
Mr. President, closed-door testimony recently revealed, struck in Page, that they were laughing at the idea that the Hillary investigation was a real investigation, and that it went directly into Loretta Lynch's office, which now raises a whole new set of other questions. And they were confident about that. And it was struck that the interview with Hillary, uncharacteristically, frankly, unprecedented, allowed two other people in that interview. While she was being interviewed in an investigation. Comey, of course, exonerated her, but he even acknowledged top-secret classified information on that server. I did disagree with you at the time. You, after the election, were basically saying, let bygones be bygones, let's not go down this road. Do you regret saying that? And do you think now, if we really are to get to the bottom and the truth, it has to also include Hillary Clinton, the email server, which would be an underlying crime and obstruction, which everyone in the media seems to care about, the intent behind the 33,000 subpoenaed emails deleted, bleach bit, hammers, SIM cards?
No, I don't regret saying it. When I won, they were all saying, lock her up, lock her up. And I said, no, let's get on with life. That was different. It was like right after the election, you want to get a new page and turn over a new leaf. And I said, let's get on with it. Let's, you know, build up the economy, which, by the way, is doing record business. I'm so proud of the economy. We're doing numbers that nobody's ever believed. Probably the best economy we've ever had, best unemployment numbers we've ever had. It's been incredible. But I said, let's get on with our life. Let's forget about the past. But now what happened is fairly shortly after that great evening, they started coming at us with the insurance policy, and everything they did was so dishonest. And then we really started looking into a lot of things like her deleted emails and acid-washed emails, which is unheard of because of the expense of doing it.
I just want you guys to catch what he just said there. Then we started looking into. That's been going on for a really, really long time. He just basically hinted at it. That soon after they started coming after him with the insurance policy, they started looking into her and her emails.
And how she got away with it, how her lawyer got away with it, how all of these things happened. Don't forget, when they interviewed her, that was on July 4th weekend. It was very, very late into the July 4th weekend. They asked her questions. They didn't have a stenographer. They didn't have anybody swear her in. They didn't have a tape recorder. They just walked in, asked her some questions, and that was fine. In the meantime, look at what she's done, how she's destroyed the lives of people that were on our campaign. She's destroyed their lives. And
now he's blaming Hillary Clinton for the Mueller investigation and what she's done in her part in causing all of this, and how she's hurt the people on the Trump campaign and people who were trying to do the right thing for the country. And talking about Cheryl Mills.
The DNC. And frankly, when the FBI went into the DNC, the DNC told them to get the hell out of here. Think of that. They told that to the FBI, and they wouldn't give them the server. I want to find out what's on that server, the DNC server, because that's the big thing. Nobody's seen that server yet. The FBI didn't see it. And these are the top people at the FBI where you had absolute dirty cops. These were dirty cops. Now, the FBI, I know FBI guys, these are the best in the world, but the people leading it, Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and all of these people, the lawyer who admitted, frankly, how crooked things were. I mean, when that testimony comes out, it's already come out partially. When that testimony comes out from the attorney for the FBI, you'll see.
Interesting. He's read testimony that's not been released yet. And he wants to see the DNC server. Can someone have Julian Assange please enter stage right to talk about where he got his information from? Can someone have Julian Assange call him from stage right, please? We'll count down. He's really interested in seeing that DNC server that no one was able to ever look at. Gosh, I love this man. Now, I want you guys to think back before we get to the next clip about what happened and what Donald Trump says about folks Oh, I don't know him. I don't know. He seems like a good guy, Whitaker. I'm not really sure. I never met him before. Don't really know him all that well. Seems like a great guy, straight shooter, bar. Let's let him talk about Michael Horowitz now. Before we do that, though, let's start him talking about the coup attempt. Let's listen to him say that.
The world, but the people leading it, Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and all of these people, the lawyer who admitted, frankly, how crooked things were. I mean, when that testimony comes out, it's already come out partially. When that testimony comes out from the attorney for the FBI, you'll see.
Baker.
So I really say now we have to get down, because this was a coup. This was an attempted overthrow of the United States government. We had people coming out to vote from all over this country that are in love with what we're doing. It's called Make America Great Again. That's what we've done and we're doing. And unlimited manpower, woman power, and there's nothing, nothing. And it was a very bad 2 years for this country. But what has happened is we found everything going in the opposite direction. And I think now it's turning unbelievable. The tables have turned and you're seeing things come out like you just noticed. And I think it's going to be very interesting. It's very important for the country to now find out how that whole thing started. And in all fairness to Bob Mueller, it started long before he was appointed. This was going on long before that. You understand. The First Lady and I came down on the escalator on June 16th, and this started very shortly after that. It was a disgrace. Disgrace.
Mr. President, we expect a lot more coming out in the days, weeks, and even months ahead. We know at least 53 more testimony closed door of many of these players that will be released. We know that the Inspector General, he now will have his report. We expect sometime in May, where he's been investigating the FISA abuse issue. And then, of course, we have Huber on leaking and whatever his report ultimately ends up becoming. We know that, you know, there's a lot of information. And then the issue, you have, the last time I talked to you about a month ago, you said you would declassify the FISA applications. You would declassify Gang of Eight material, 302 material. If the Grassley, Graham, Nunes memos are correct in the bulk.
I just want to stop real quick. He's going to also talk in this clip, I believe, about declassification and what he's declassifying. Listen very carefully to that.
Of information in the FISA applications were, even as the New York Times suggested this week, may have been misinformation from the Russians that Hillary bought and paid for, that was disseminated to the media and the American people before that election. You know, what would that mean to you?
Well, first of all, I was very impressed that the New York Times did that, because that was the first good glimpse that maybe mainstream is going to pick up the greatest.
Notice how he makes a distinction between mainstream, which means he's aware there's something other than mainstream, which means he's aware of all the work the amazing people outside of the big networks are doing to uncover this story, which I think is really important.
Political scandal in the history of our country. Again, bigger than Watergate, because it means so much. This was a coup. This wasn't stealing information from an office in the Watergate apartments. This was an attempted coup, and it's inconceivable, like a third world country, and inconceivable. And I have to say that I think a lot of information is coming out, and it's coming out fast, much faster than anybody would have thought. And there are a lot of people very nervous about things that are going on. And I will say that IG, the Inspector General Horowitz, he, other than his conclusion where he said no bias, but he meant that in a different way than you would think. He gave a great report last time, and I really hope that he's going to give a, I don't know him.
He was
appointed by Obama. That bothers me a little bit, but I think he's, everything I can see, he's really an honorable guy.
You see, he knows what his base is saying. He knows. You guys, a lot of you out there have said, well, Horowitz was appointed by Obama. And I've gone through the reasons why that is. You know, Horowitz fought back against Congress, had to get a law passed to be able to do his job, Holder withholding, no pun, information from him on Fast and Furious. making it, you know, so he has to get approval from the people holding the information about corruption to do his job. Horowitz had no love lost for the Obama administration. He was targeted by them.
And I think he knows how big this is. I think he knows how big this is. And if he is as honorable as he's supposed to be, the IG report coming out in 3 or 4 weeks, from what I hear, is going to be and should be and almost has to be a blockbuster because he has access to information that most people don't. And that's what he did the last time. He was able to find things that a lot of people, great students of this whole thing, like Devin Nunes.
And then he compliments the Nunezes of the world who deserve it. And then he gets into talking about, then he gets into talking about the declassification. Listen closely.
Will you declassify the FISA applications, Gang of Eight material, those 302s, or, you know, what we call in this program the bucket of five?
Yes, everything's going to be declassified and more, much more than what you just mentioned. It'll all be declassified. And I'm glad I waited because I thought that maybe they would obstruct if I did it early. And I think I was right. So I'm glad I waited. And now the Attorney General can take a look, a very strong look at whatever it is, but it will be declassified and more than what you just mentioned.
Interesting. What else could there be? What else could there be? Lots of stuff coming out, guys. And I said on my Twitter yesterday, before I close out the show a little bit early today, if you guys are one of those folks that have been saying, I believe it, I'll believe it when I see it, just take a nice bath, have a nice sip of wine, have a nice glass of bourbon, put some bubbles in there, get up, dry yourself off, shake yourself off, and stop it. I've said this before. Literally every single thing that I see every day, 18 hours a day that I spend doing this, thanks to you guys out there in the world who depend on me and you know, trust me to go through with this information for you, there is not one thing going on right now that makes me think that we will not see accountability and justice. Not one. It was a very lonely show today, all alone in the wilderness. I hope you guys enjoyed it anyway. I hope you're not bored listening to me talk for 50 minutes all by myself. It was a dark and stormy night. It's not as good with Frank here. Well, listen, we will see you guys on Monday, bright, well, in the middle of the day, bright and early for me, in the middle of the day at 2:30. You guys can listen to this podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, RadioInfluence.com, 2:30 Eastern Time, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And please, guys, give us a review in Apple iTunes. Helps us move up the charts. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for sticking with me for the show, and I will talk to you very soon.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We're talking cocktails this week. We're talking the industry. We're talking about Dylan Holcomb. Check my boy out. He is the master mixologist out there at the Pony Up Bar in Denver, Colorado. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Duffified Live, Dylan Holcomb.
It was when I was working in D.C. for Founding Farmers. I became very passionate about that side of the business of creating the craft cocktails and that experience and those great flavors and what goes into it. And like coming up with your own style, it was important for me to like incorporate, you know, I've always been fast working in lots of nightclubs and very busy bars. And I wanted to incorporate that into the cocktail world because I think people are tired of waiting 15 minutes for a drink and they're tired of having to make like a reservation to have a secret password to go through a door and then to have the bartender treat you like a douche because you don't know what chartreuse is. People are over that, you know? So
exactly.
I wanted to incorporate the fact of bartending, which is a skill and an art, with making great cocktails, with mixology, I guess, and marriage those two worlds together. Because the American palate has definitely changed. It's gone from apple martinis to Moscow mules over my career. And they want to have that. But they're tired of the pretentiousness. They're tired of a bartender that is they don't have jokes. They don't have to talk to people. They don't pay attention to sports. Whether or not you like sports, pay attention because your job is to entertain guests. And, you know, if they want to talk about football, you should be well-versed on football so you can talk to them about football. They don't want to talk about green chartreuse.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.